Like many agencies, the Defense and Homeland Security departments have been challenged to get the security clearances needed by their employees. Yet equally challenging is what happens when officials need to revoke someone's clearance. The Government Accountability Office finds the departments have work to do there, too. Auditors find inconsistencies in both agencies' data on employees eligible to access classified information. Brenda Farrell is the Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the GAO. She joins me now with more on the study and her recommendations. Brenda, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having GAO on board today.
All right. So always glad to have you guys on. So the agencies have been chided. The big issue for years is getting clearances done. Now you're saying they're having trouble getting clearances pulled?
Yes, we're looking at the tail end of the process now. This work was actually done at the request of ranking member Benny Thompson, who's had an interest in the security clearance process for years. We did a review for him a couple of years ago looking at the first step in the process, which is how do you determine if a position needs access to classified information and therefore the person holding that position would need a clearance. That's the first step. Now we're at the tail end. Once you have a clearance, the circumstances arrive which question one's trustworthiness, and thus there's processes in place to determine whether or not a clearance should be taken away or revoked.
And so when someone, let's just go back to the most basic situation, if someone leaves the government, do they get automatically revoked at that point?
If someone leaves on their own and there's been no questions about their clearances, their clearance would be deactivated. If questions have arisen and the revocation process has started, we are told that many individuals do decide to leave before that determination is made. And that is one of the problems with the data. Both departments and their components, DOD and DHS, were able to provide us data on the number of revocations and the reasons for revocations, but they weren't able to provide us some other key data, such as how many employees actually received a proposal to revoke their clearances. And one of the reasons is the data fields are not completed, even though the capability is there for the departments to have such information. But it's still questionable about how many people are actually affected by revocations.
So someone who is the subject of a possible revocation, they are entitled to notice of that act possibly taking place?
Yes. And the processes differ. The security clearance process is a little bit different than some other programs in the federal government. A lot of them are governed by legislative requirements. The security clearance process is governed to a large extent by executive orders. And there's two main executive orders in place, one that governs military, civilians, and contractors, and another one that governs contractors only. And we found some inconsistencies in how the agencies administered the process from those two orders. Some of the issues were within the rights of the executive order, and some raised a lot of questions in terms of timing, personal appeals, cross-examinations. For example, the right to counsel. The DOD components provide a pre-hearing memorandum to their employees, military, civilians, and government-wide contractors, informing them of their right to legal counsel. However, there was one DHS component that, in contrast, was erroneously informing military personnel that they had no right to counsel, and that was the Coast Guard. And the existing Coast Guard instruction that implements these executive orders that I was referring to does not elaborate on the individual's right for counsel if a decision does result in a revocation. The Coast Guard says that they recognize that this is a disparity, and they're going to follow our recommendation to revise that instruction and make it formal so that the individuals do realize what rights they have in that particular area.
We're speaking with Brenda Farrell. She's Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the GAO. So it sounds like agencies are defaulting in a general way towards revocation because possibly they're worried about security lapses if they are not diligent about making sure they pull them. Is that what you think is going on?
The revocation, like I said, there's executive orders in process to govern this There has been limited oversight to make sure that the execution of these policies are uniform and consistent across the federal government. It was back in 2008 that by another executive order, established the Director for National Intelligence as the authority responsible for overarching oversight, making sure that the policies were consistent, making sure that things were in place to determine eligibility to have access to classified information. And the Director for National Intelligence, as the security executive agent, has been moving forward in many different aspects of the security process, but has not been focused on this particular part. The DNI and that office has conducted 7 reviews at different agencies, but remember, there's over 100, looking at the process as a whole, which would include revocation, but again, they're not focused on it. So there has not been this oversight to make sure that the Coast Guard is implementing the revocation process the same way as the TSA or the same way as the Army, and that all individuals are experiencing the same due process.
So it sounds like what you found is more of an employee rights issue than there is a issue of danger to security from people seeing information they shouldn't.
Well, there's the revocation is about taking the individual's right to have access to classified information away, but there are also mechanisms in place that are concerns about are there strong enough reporting requirements. So if an individual does see something that's going on with someone's financial situation, it is reported, and that is another area. We were more focused, though, on this particular revocation process in terms of once a decision is made to look at that individual's access and should they or should they not have their clearance taken away.
Are there emergency circumstances in which someone can be summarily revoked for their security clearance?
The clearance process still takes time. It's not something that's going to happen in 24 hours. And there's different processes, again, in place, depending upon component, about what happens to an individual during that process while the high-level panel is reviewing the information and making a decision whether or not to take it away. They are suspended for a period of time. They're not allowed access to classified once that proposal has been made.
Okay, so it's kind of like you don't have it until we're sure you shouldn't have it.
Correct.
And so have there been any cases of security lapses or situations that have been dangerous because of the inconsistency in the way this is all applied?
Well, this is the concern for the individual. If there's obviously inconsistencies, then individuals are being treated differently. There's another situation, for example, with cross-examinations. I mentioned there's 2 executive orders. One governs contractors, and that particular executive order explicitly provides the opportunity for a cross-examination for contractors to do so during the process, while the executive order that governs military and civilians is silent on whether or not cross-examination or when it can take place. So as a consequence, in DHS, the DHS instruction that governs these 7 components is very vague on the opportunities to allow cross-examination of witnesses. So you have some DHS components that are allowing such cross-examination and other DHS components that are not allowing such cross-examination. And officials have emphasized to us that cross-examination is allowed in DOD as a matter of fundamental fairness. So you can see why there is a need to make sure that consistency is across the federal government to ensure that individuals are given their due rights.
So it sounds like, now earlier you said that there's a data field that prevents the execution of all of this in the proper manner. So do you have recommendations both at the technical level like that, and also it sounds like you've got recommendations for how they manage the thing at the people level?
Yes, we've got 13 recommendations to DOD, DHS, and the DNI regarding data reliability and other efforts to improve their quality of their data as well as oversight. I mentioned that during this review, we ran across an issue with DOD's data. It has to do with the number of employees who hold clearances. When we were looking at the component data, you know, Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy, Washington Headquarters Services, we obtained the total number of employees that were eligible to access classified information, as well as the total personnel employed in those components. And what we found was that in several of the components, there were more employees with clearances than the agency actually employed. For example, in the Air Force, they had 225,000 plus total employees to access classified information, whereas they only employed 187,207. So they had 120% increase in employees with eligibility. We met with DOD several times going over this data, trying to find out why this is happening. That was not the focus of this review, but as I said, we found this disparity in several of the components. DOD is not clear what is happening. They have not reviewed it. They did provide some potential explanations. Perhaps people are separating from the Air Force, for example, and it's not being entered into the system. But it's very important to know how many people hold clearances out of your population. That's basic internal control to have complete, reliable data in order to measure your performance. The other thing is, for years, Congress has wanted to know how many people hold clearances, and DOD and others could only provide a partial answer. They really didn't have that total number. In 2010, there was an Intelligence Act passed that required the Director for National Intelligence to annually provide the number of people eligible to hold clearances. So that number has been provided to Congress since the passage of that act, and the latest figure was in the neighborhood of 5.1 million. But now we know that that number is not correct because the DOD number is off. And DOD is a very large entity. They have the most clearance holders. So sure, even if they're only off a slight percentage, it's going to significantly affect the total percentage. And it makes it difficult also when they say they're going to reduce the number of clearances by 10% because they don't have a reliable baseline to base that decision on.
So you went into a dark closet and found all kinds of things when you switched the light on.
Yes, we found a number of issues. These departments, I have to say, were most cooperative during the review. I mentioned we have 13 recommendations, and DHS and DOD and DNI did concur with all of them. There was one that DOD partially concurred with that dealt with consolidation of the Personnel Appeals Board, but they were agreeable to looking at it further.
So you basically got the thank you, Brenda note from them.
Well, I think it's thank you, GAO.
All right. All right. Brenda Farrell is the Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the GAO. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.